to expect. Stay tuned and enjoy.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and you are tuned into WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Good evening. It's just about 6 p.m. in the nation's capital. The name of the show is News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm on Fridays from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on WPFW 89.3 FM, your Pacifica affiliate in Washington, D.C. I want to thank my main man, Kalia, who is he's the one on the phones when you call in. He's, of course, the brains behind this operation. He's making sure all the technical things happen to make this show work seamlessly and smoothly. So thank you very much to my main man, Kalia. And don't forget the number. I do take callers. The number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. Doing too many things at once. I almost forgot the number there for a second. I am actually doing it from afar. I'm up in Kingston, New York, a small town near Poughkeepsie, up on the Hudson River. Going to do a peace rally tomorrow here. I'm going to be speaking here. Ray McGovern, Gerald Celente, Roger Waters. Number of other people are going to be here. Scott Ritter, and some other people. I can't think of who, but you get the picture. There's going to be a bunch of people here doing, having a great peace rally. And I think that's always a good idea. If somebody calls me and says we're having a peace rally somewhere, we're having an anti-war rally, pro-peace, whatever, I'm in. I don't care who it is. I'm always in. So I'm up here in Kingston doing that. Let's see. Let's start with the news. You know, I always like to touch base on things that, you know, are in the news, maybe that I have a perspective on from, you know, in a historical context. One of the things that just happened is James Comey, former FBI director, was charged with, I think, lying to Congress, it appears, making false statements. Interesting thing about that, right? And again, caveat for those who know me, I was a Democrat most of my life until 2016 when the whole Bernie fiasco came, and then I left, and now I was a recovering Democrat. Now I'm a recovered Democrat, and I see, you know, as I always say, that whole two-party system doesn't work for me at all because of my beliefs are to the left of both parties. I'm far to the left of the Democratic Party, just a warmongering bunch of crazies now as far as I'm concerned running that party. A genocidal lunatics are running that party, and I will have no parts of that. But let's talk about James Comey, because one of the things, you know, I get into this, I still get back. I recall this article in the Washington Post, and I've talked about it many times, wherein, you know, they did this, so however they did the test, but they found out that when people receive bits of news, that if they heard a bad thing about the if they were a Democrat and the Democrat said something, they were more likely to see it positively. If a Democrat was accused of something, they were more likely to defend it. If a Republican was accused of something, they were more likely to, you know, push it and say it was right. So basically what we see is a lot of people in this country, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, most of the time you see the world through the ideological lens. And so when they say to you, this person did something, the only thing you need to know is which party they're associated with to know whether or not you feel that it's right or wrong or good or bad. They should be prosecuted. They should be let go. I mean, I understand that. I was once there, but I'm not there anymore. So I've listened to people that I know talk, that I know are diehard Democrats, family members, friends. Trust me, I'm a black person. A lot of my friends and family members are diehard hard Democrats, and they talk about Comey. Oh, can you believe what Trump's doing to Comey? And I kind of keep quiet if I don't want a lot of guff, but sometimes I have to stand up and say, yeah, and I'm really glad of it. I don't think much of Jim Comey, and I don't think much of the FBI. Well, let me see. They killed King. They killed Malcolm X. They killed Fred Hampton. You know, the FBI really hasn't been good for black folks, hasn't been good for the left, hasn't been good for the anti-war. Only in recent years, now that the Democratic Party has shifted so far to the right that they're almost indistinguishable at times from the Republican Party, particularly in foreign policy, only now have, you know, there's some perspective seems to be, you know, different in some ways. But at any rate, so when it comes to Comey, a couple things. You know, historically, what I know about James Comey, he's just part of the machine. He's part of that horrible crooked machine of corruption and graft that's been going on for, that's all he's ever been, is a crook. All he's ever been is involved with criminality, corruption, and graft. You know, when he was working with the Bush, he was working with Alberto Gonzalez with the Bush administration, right? But now that actually the Democratic Party of today is right about where the George W. Bush Republican Party was. I would say the Democratic Party of today, the George W. Bush Republican Party of 2000 through 2006, that's the Democratic Party of today. That's the, how far that party has gone to the right. And the Republican Party, I don't even know what they are. They're just over there in La La Land somewhere. Both parties are, but in different, I put it like this. They've got different segments of La La Land, right? Kind of like Dante's Inferno, where there was different levels of hell, right? Dante Alighieri's famous Dante's Inferno, there was different levels of hell. Well, there's different levels of madness, and the two parties, in my opinion, inhabit these various levels. Jim Comey, for people who are like, Comey, they're going after Comey. Oh, no, not Comey. You did it now. You got after Jim Comey. He's our boy. Well, let's see. I remember Jim Comey when he was on the board of directors of Lockheed Martin. That's right. Military industrial complex money. Jim Comey was always one. If there was crooked money to be made, he was there to put it in his pocket. Now, you might have heard of a bank called HSBC, which was involved in scandal after scandal. And what scandals were they involved in? Let's see. I remember when they got him for laundering $880 million of drug money, including they were the principal money launderer for El Chapo, right? So HSBC was knowingly, intentionally laundering drug money for cartels all over the world and got caught. And they had the wisdom to hire James Comey and bring him on their board to help negotiate their way out of that. And of course, they negotiated their way out of that. And they put James Comey on the board and paid him well, because let's face it, he was with the Department of Justice. That's how it is. If I'm rich and I break a crime, go violate a crime, I'll go hire me somebody from the Department of Justice, pay him well, and they can talk. They got the right connections. I'm sure, you know, some brown paper bags of money passed hands in some back alley somewhere to get him out of that. Come on, $880 million, literally billions of dollars. I mean, if they said $880 million, you know it was a whole lot more than that. So HSBC Bank was laundering money, got caught, brought in James Comey, put him on the board. By the way, they paid a fine and they agreed not to do it again. And would you like to know what they did? They did it again. Of course they did it again, because it was part of their business model. You know, it's been estimated that up to 30% of the money in the major banks are from drug cartels and illegal and illegitimate cartels around the world, that our major banks are money laundering operations in a big part. Well, let me ask you this. Do you know about the connection between Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan and Epstein? Did you know that J.P. Morgan had to pay like $190 million in lawsuits because of the stuff that they did involving Epstein and the hidden money and some of the women that were young girls were in trouble sued him? J.P. Morgan was tied right to Epstein. So I'll put it to you like this. If the U.S. government tells you they can't figure out where Epstein's money went, where he got his money, where'd he get his money? Why that? This guy, a guy with no education who just happened to be hired as a high school teacher at the Dalton School. No, didn't even have a college degree. And next thing you know, he's got an island. He's got a gigantic compound in New Mexico. He's got the largest, most expensive townhouse in all of Manhattan. And nobody happens to know how he got his money. But J.P. Morgan knows, and the government wants to tell us they can't figure it out. Of course they can figure it out. Of course they know what he was doing because they was in on it. Of course they knew about HSBC laundering money, because it's part of the game. It's part of the corrupt game. If you think their hands are clean, you don't understand how the game's being played. Let me give you the number again, 202-588-0893. And the bottom line is that Comey, FBI's always been, I call them the secret police, the Gestapo. You know, when there was anti-war or, you know, black activists in the 60s, their job was to hunt them down and kill them. And they did it well. And now, if you think, I'm losing sleep over Comey. I'm celebrating it. I'm dancing on his grave. I mean, I say that metaphorically speaking. I'm dancing on his political grave. I hope he goes to jail for the rest of his life and never gets out, along with many other people around him. But, you know, I'm not a Democrat or a Republican, so I don't have to have an ideological bend here. I can just say he's a crook, and I like to see crooks get their comeuppance. 202-588-0893. First call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Garland. What's going on? Max calling.
Talk to me, Max. What's happening?
Oh, nothing much. Just you know, like the Jim Comey stuff will be interesting to see how it plays out. So I looked into some of the stuff that you talked about with the Russian stuff. Like, I know, like, some of the FISA warrants. I watched, like, your whole hour-long YouTube video on it. I know, like, the way, like, with the kind of overlap of the Steele dossier and Crossfire Hurricane and the way the FISA warrants were obtained, it's not a good look. Like, you know, even the Inspector General said there should have been more oversight. But like,
not only that, the Inspector General, did the John Durham report find when it comes to Russiagate? The John Durham report found that, quote, there was no predicate for the investigation. John Durham said they kept running into stop signs and they kept driving through the stop sign. So an official investigation found that they had no reason to even start the investigation. And once they started it, every time they came into a reason to stop, they kept going anyway, Max. It was the biggest. I mean, it was a criminal operation. It was an intelligence operation. I'm no Trump fan, but the law is the law. Anyway, yeah. Go on, Max.
But didn't the Inspector General, though, he didn't go that far and wasn't there because of the specific with George Papadopoulos' conversation? Didn't some people think that warranted the investigation? And then
John Durham said there was no predicate for the investigation.
But there was, if you look into it, there was no investigation. No predicate for the investigation. We should trust on that? Is he the only person we should trust on that? Because are you saying that, like, nothing in the Mueller report was factual? Like, that was all just a lie? Like, it was all just fabricated?
No.
They just made every...
No, I'm not saying it was a lie. It was fabricated. I'm saying there was no predicate for the investigation.
And what's
I'm saying it was absurd. I'm with John Durham. It was absurd from the very beginning to believe that Donald Trump somehow worked for the Russians. Huh?
My question would be, like, what do you think about... So with Manafort, right? What do you think about that? He wrote a memo in, like, because there was a memo obtained that he wrote a memo in 2005 to what's his name, Oleg Deprisskia, who was a known associate of Vladimir Putin, that he could influence policy in many of these countries, the United States, Ukraine, to benefit the Russian government. I know.
How does that show that Donald Trump worked for the Republican? I mean, worked for the Russians.
That was his campaign.
In 2005, some guy that was associated with Trump wrote a letter that said something, and that had something to do with 2016 election?
He was Trump's campaign chairman, and he was sharing data. He was sharing data with Konstantin Kilimnik, who was also a Russian agent and operative.
No, he was not. Look it up. No, he wasn't. Konstantin Kilimnik worked for the United States. He worked for the U.S. Embassy in Kiev. You didn't know that?
I mean, from what I read, he had ties to Russia. So, like, I guess we just fundamentally have a different opinion on that.
I'll tell you like this: you wouldn't want to bet me on that one. You wouldn't want to put your money on that one. He worked for the U.S. Embassy in Kiev. Did you know that?
Look into that again. I don't know.
You wouldn't want to bet me on that one, brother. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. And then there was no honesty when he spoke in court, right? He lied to protect Trump in that investigation. And I'm not saying Trump worked with Russia. Obviously, they never found that. I'm just saying that, like, all these people basically lied to protect him. And I guess you don't believe either that Roger Stone, right, that he was communicating with the Groosfer. You also think that's fake, that was
Well, let me ask you this. Here's what I will say, Max. It doesn't matter about the whole WikiLeaks thing, because here's what we know, that the allegation was that the Russians hacked into the DNC server, that the Russians stole emails from the DNC server and then sent them to WikiLeaks. However, we now know that while it appears that someone hacked into the DNC server, no one ever took emails off the DNC server, not the Russians or not anyone. So since the Russians or no one else hacked and stole them and took them off, the Russians couldn't have given them to WikiLeaks if they didn't take them off the server now, could they?
I gotta still do more looking. Is that even true? Because Marco Rubio, right, the State Department guy, literally the Secretary of State now, so Trump must have a lot of faith and trust in him, literally led the bipartisan Senate-led committee that literally found that people like Manafort was a grave counterintelligence threat, and found out that in terms of like bot harvesting and social media warfare, that Russia did not interfere like in like the vote tallies or anything, right? Yeah, Trump won the election fair and square, but that they did interfere in terms of like social media and like bots,
Idea here's what I think absurd. The idea that a Russian troll farm spent roughly $100,000 on the election, half of it after the election, the idea that that's interference with the elections, $100,000. And do you remember Mike Bloomberg spent $500 million trying to run in 2020, I believe it was. 3 weeks, he spent $500 million and couldn't get one single percentage point more. And I'm supposed to believe that a Russian troll farm spent, let's say, $50,000, and that threw the election?
No,
and did you ever look at the stuff that they had online? It was like a picture of buff Bernie. So I'm supposed to say, well, Garland Nixon was going to vote for Hillary Clinton, and then I saw a picture of buff Bernie and said, I'm writing it, Vladimir Putin. No, None of it makes sense. You get the last word before we jump on. None of it makes even any sense. It's preposterous.
I think you kind of just mischaracterized my position. I'm not saying whether they spent money or not money that it influenced or altered the outcome of the election. I'm just saying, like, you have all these people, like, in Trump's inner circle that all had some form of a connection to a tie to Russian influence and things that were associated with them. And it's just the way I would just say that Trump just acts. I mean, Trump literally just said the other day that Vladimir Putin told him that he would not have lost the 2020 election if they didn't do mail votes. And then I go on this rabbit hole research of how Russia's investigations are conducted. There's no independence in their elections or anything like that. Like, you know, I would argue that Putin has basically just sealed the deal to where he's botched every election and he can just artificially make himself the winner.
I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you're talking about. Russian election? In the last Russian election, the U.S.-sponsored polls said that Vladimir Putin would get 86% of the vote. Our poll said that, and he got 87%. He is one of the most beloved leaders of any leader of any country in the world. I can't think of one where the people in the country that he's in likes and supports him anymore. The people of Russia love the ground he walks on. They think he's one of the best leaders that ever happened. So then why would he need to steal it?
In the military. The military is guarding all the polls. They have ballot stuffing. They have all that. Like, and
they don't need to do that. The people love him.
I mean, that's what
the Russian people love him.
There are certain studies that are done that he just couldn't receive 100% of the vote. That it's not even mathematically feasibly possible.
He got 87%.
And he has control. He controls the election.
You're saying
no,
makes no,
no
sense. The people of Russia absolutely love Vladimir Putin. Why would he have to cheat? Huh?
Well, why would he have? Because they prevent people from voting. There's pressure within the Kremlin.
They don't have to.
All the bureaucrats to vote for him as well.
The people in Russia absolutely love him.
You're saying as if it's after the fact. Like I said, everything I've studied is that he didn't even actually get 87 million votes. That's not even a real number, is what I'm saying.
87%. Yeah, that makes sense for me. If you understand Russia like I do, the people of Russia absolutely love that.
It's not even a real number. It's just not even a real
number. Okay, well, look, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. But, I mean, look, it is what it is. I'd like to tell you it's something else. Our polls say that. The final polls say that. And the people of Russia, he is one of the most popular leaders, if not the most popular leader that Russia ever had. So the idea that he had to steal it doesn't even make sense. Anyway, 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
T. Berry from Upper Marlboro. How you doing today?
Hey, what's happening, brother?
Oh, a whole lot. I was listening to your conversation there, and I just want to chip in. Those were U.S. pollsters who came up with the 86%. They weren't hampered in any way by Russia,
yes.
and there was no mistake because it was more than one poll that was taken. So, you know, he can go back and look at back page stories on the Washington Post if he wants to do that. But I'm saying that generally, I think you were talking about we always, African Americans always vote Democrats. But I remember that changed on a dime. When we had a media that allowed a little more coverage and didn't obscure things, what happened, John Kennedy had a phone call. We're satisfied with little. We couldn't get reparations. We couldn't get it. But he made a phone call to Martin Luther King when he was arrested in, I think, Arkansas or something. And mm-hmm. that phone call was on every American TV station of the three that we had at that time. People don't believe we had only three stations, but we did, and they went off at midnight.
Yep.
But
yep.
People here, and that changed from about 97% Republican, we went to Democrat. It doesn't
yep.
take much to satisfy us. A call, a sympathetic call, seemed to do it. When it came time to backing up promises to Americans, I'm sorry, the racist Lyndon Johnson had more input into it than Kennedy, but I don't know. I think now there's not very many stations like PFW, and you know, and PFW didn't exist back then. But I am saying that there was more true coverage, and there was more diversity mm-hmm. in the media than now. We have the same five or six companies that own all the media, 70% of all the media, including the internet. And it's money. Money is the case. That's where I would differ from you on your argument about, about the FBI guy. Because he did speak, he was speaking to Russians, maybe not about the election, but he was speaking to them about real estate deals where he would benefit. And I'm talking about Trump. So, and that was obscured by the media. That anybody who has a thing of making himself rich, really a billionaire when he wasn't, you got to be distrustful of. And I don't really care one way or the other, because I always thought most politicians, and unfortunately I'm saying now most black politicians are paid by AIPAC, but they're also paid by the medical people there. And I'm talking mm-hmm. about politicians down to and church leaders and everything else. You don't hear things. If Kamala Harris had said, I'm going to split with Biden based on humanitarian things, that these are people who are not defending themselves, but they're defending they're killing largely unarmed people, and they have a thing of making them move, she would have had a lot more people, both black and white, coming out. But that was not going to come up there. She couldn't even let black people know it's an apartheid state. Worse apartheid than what was occurring in the American South. I might not have been able to go to certain parks and other things when I was a kid, but they can't even drink the same water. It comes from different sources to Palestinians
yep.
than the water that the Israelis took over and only gave to their farms and their people who are continuing to steal their land and put them out. And I think that most of the media just obscures that. I heard some loudmouth, like, oh, well, you grab a bull by the horn, and it's going to have. They had been doing that stuff to Palestinians for the last 78 years. There were 20,000. There were 20,000 Palestinians in jail without any kind of trial or anything else, and they're still not talking about them being hostages. The whole country is a hostage.
Well, they don't have an army,
a navy, an air force. Pardon?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
well,
T-Bird, I'll say this.
I'm sorry.
One of the things that I say when people talk about October 7th is this. Read a book called The Fires of Jubilee. The Fires of Jubilee is about the Nat Turner Rebellion. And it talks about it was brutal. There was atrocities committed. There was heads cut off of women and children. There was slaughtering of, you know, family, blah, 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 right? Nat Turner Rebellion. He got a group of slaves to rebel. They got arms, they got axes, they got whatever they could, and they attacked the slave-owning families, and they slaughtered them. And, I mean, it's terrible. It's a terrible thing to say that, you know, somebody went in the house and pulled everybody out, men, women, and children, chopped their heads off with axes, shot them, and threw them in a pile in the front. Okay, horrible, terrible thing to think about, right? But you can't talk about the Nat Turner Rebellion without talking about what happened before the Nat Turner Rebellion. So were the Nat Turner Rebellion people, Nat Turner and his group of rebels, were they monsters that were cutting off heads and slaughtering people? Yes, they were. They were monsters that were created by slavery. Slavery created those monsters. If you and me or whatever saw somebody raping our daughters and our wives, selling them away from us, that our young children doing all these kind of things, we'd probably become monsters. So you can't talk about the Nat Turner Rebellion without talking about the slavery and the brutality of slavery before the Nat Turner Rebellion. Likewise, you can't talk about October 7th without talking about the apartheid brutalities and murder before October 7th and pretend like nothing happened before then. Go ahead.
You say you can't, but they do. Aside from Norm Finkelstein, I would not have known that they had cutting the grass rituals every
two mowing weeks. The lawn, yeah, that's what they say.
Yes, mowing the lawn, that's what it is. Mowing the lawn rituals where they killed more, probably more than happened in this incident, where their aim there was just to take some hostages so they could trade them with their own hostages. But in so doing, they defeated a very sophisticated computerized prison system that kept them within walls. I mean, a little concentration camp that they keep them in. People don't realize that these are people who had their land stolen, or the descendants of people who had their land stolen, and they were put into a little pile. And even there, in these little reservation concentration camps they have, you can see what's happening now in the West Bank. It was happening back then. When one person, of all the books and articles, Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote a thing talking about them being in an apartheid state. Do you think that they did anything? They attacked Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yes, they did.
And
the whole system attacked him. You know, black and white, the whole system, all these people that are out here that's paid by the system. If you recall, this was before this. They all went after Ta-Nehisi Coates because he had to know. Remember, was it him that said from the river to the sea when they attacked? I think it might have been him. Somebody said that a while back, and they took him out.
Yeah, he didn't say that, but they accused him of being one-sided and all that. The other thing is, right now, there are signs of hope. The whole UN did what our Congress should have done. When the genocidal guy who believes in violence and whatever, and he fortunately is up against a country that has a moral leader who believes in attacking people who pull triggers and not, you know, and not knocking down buildings and moving a whole population. So they're not taking advantage of that, but the whole UN walked, most of the UN delegates turned their back and walked out on them. So I'm saying we're starting to get there because the young people are starting to learn the truth that they obscure. And when they talk about it starting and they had no right doing what they did on October 7th or 6th or whatever it was and whatever, it's people starting to realize the truth. That these are people who are slammed on, and just like slaves are made to be prisoners in their own land. And I'm glad when there's a prison break, and I hope it continues. You have a good
one. Thank you very much. The number is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. You listen to WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. We have another call. No other calls. Okay, well, we got open lines. Feel free to call in whatever it is you want to talk about. Right now, people are animated very much about the brutality, about the genocide that's going on in the Middle East. And one of the things that T-Bird was talking about was just the other day, Benjamin Netanyahu came to the UN to talk. And when he did, numerous people, a number of leaders from all over the world, just got up and walked out. I was happy to see that. And, you know, what we're looking at now is a country in Israel that is being, you know, isolated from the world. And might I add, it sponsors the United States. There's going to be a long price to pay for what the United States is doing you know, defending a genocide. You know, if I give you a gun, if I point to somebody and say, there's the victim, go shoot him. And then you go shoot him. And then I hide the gun for you. And then I shield you from prosecution. And I give you an alibi so you won't be prosecuted. I am just as guilty of committing that crime as you are. And the United States government is every bit as guilty of this unthinkable genocide as the Israelis are. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Comment question, Khalil.
All right, you're on the air.
Hey, Garland.
What's happening?
How you doing tonight?
I am just wonderful.
So, as a veteran of the United States military, I've been educated, as every person who exists in the military has to be educated on military history. One of the things that is really important to military history is, I think, a concept we call the laws of armed conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So it's legal to disguise yourself as a medic to infiltrate a military institution, or that's against the laws of armed conflict?
That is against the laws of armed conflict.
How about drones, and specifically equipping Ukrainian trains or, distribution trucks with secret silos inside them to host drones so that when they fly into Russia, they can release drones and bomb Russian Air Force bases?
Well, I'll put it to you like
that
this.
That would probably be against the
law. Yeah. I don't know that is against the laws
standard,
of armed conflict.
It should be against the law. Huh? It's not, but by the same standard, it should be by any right, correct?
I don't know. I don't know that it is. I don't think that it is based on my understanding of international law.
But wait a second. If you're understanding international law, if Ukraine was allowed to launch, drone subs against naval freighters of the Russian Navy and really do damage, well, what's stopping from China from doing that to America?
Well, let me say a couple of things. Number one,
when we're thinking about laws of armed conflict.
Yeah, but I'll say this. Number one, those of you,
I'm going to take off. I want to listen to you, Garland, okay. So please keep going.
All right, thank you very much. Those who know me know my position on the Ukraine conflict, but I'll say this. If you're just talking about the issue of international law, you know, if two parties are involved in an armed conflict, and as long as one party targets military targets, for the most part, it's legal to target military targets. If to target civilian targets would be illegal, but if you're targeting military targets and military operations, as a rule, you know, that's going to be legal under international law. 202-588-0893. Do we have another caller? No more callers. Okay, we got open. We got open lines, and you can call and talk about whatever you choose. Certainly, as I said, the Jim Comey thing is out there, and you know, I think it's unfortunate what has happened in this country when it comes to something that used to be ideology, and now it is. You know, I hate to use the pejorative and derogative term that I use when I talk about the parties, because I generally call them two brainwashed cults. But, you know, a couple of groups that say this is my group and I will defend anybody in my group. And we have a certain amount of people in our group that we defend. And if somebody in the other group, we'll attack. And I just don't believe in that stuff. You know, I don't have a group number one, but even if I do, I believe in justice. And if somebody is in that I ideological disagree with Donald Trump. Ideologically, I completely disagree with Donald Trump, but I believe in justice. I don't think Donald Trump should be treated in an unjust way. If somebody goes out and when I used to be the ACLU, the reason that I was this. Here's what I believe. If somebody goes out and commits a quadruple murder, we still have laws, right? And they should still be subject to due process. They should get all their constitutional rights. And if convicted, I don't believe in the death penalty. They should get, you know, life without parole, whatever the case may be like that. So even if a person is the horrible murderer, I still believe in due process and justice for every single person. And in that case, if they're guilty, justice could be life without parole. So I don't understand the concept of people who say, well, this guy's on my team, so I'm going to defend him, and that person's on the other team, so I want to see bad things happen to him. I want justice. And I don't have a team justice. That's what you call me. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from? Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hello.
Yep, you're on the air.
Hello. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, you are on the air. I think we're struggling here, but give it a shot.
You just put me on hold. No, thank you, Garland. This is Bernie from Baltimore. You are just unbelievable. What a great show you have and host you are. And you see your left of the Democratic Party, you can still be a capitalist and still be left of the Democratic Party. They're that far to the right. And the reason why I say that, I think all of us want to build some type of wealth. And I think a big problem is with a lot of Democratic leadership that's very, very wealthy. Let's say they have a net worth of $5 million in investable assets or more. To me, that's rich. Okay.
Yes.
And they'll say, oh, well, I'm not Jeff Bezos rich, but you're wealthy. Now, there is two interesting terms that have been developed over the last few years. One was by a historian named Yuval Harari. I don't know if you know that name. Are you familiar with him?
No.
Harari? Okay, well, he wrote a couple books that are popular in Silicon Valley, and one was called, I think, Homo Deus, Tomorrow's Man. And his argument is, we're developing a useless class. And a useless class is being created by automation and AI. And it's not just, low-skilled workers with a poor education. No, AI, I'm in business that uses a lot of automation in AI, and a lot of white-collar jobs full-time jobs are going to turn into 1099 contractor jobs or will be eliminated. So that's one term. And then the other term is from the United Way. Apparently they developed this back in 2012 and it's picked up a lot of traction, something called the ALICE class, which is asset limited, income constrained, but employed. In other words, you're living paycheck to paycheck. Now, there are estimates that at least 42% of the American households are in, you know, that category, and it's going to expand because, you know, of a number of factors, but at the top of the list is AI. If you look at the stock market right now, it's staggering. The top five or six companies, they're all tech companies in AI. NVIDIA, Microsoft, yeah, Apple's there because they have the Apple phone. They don't have much of an AI play, but Amazon, Google. I mean, this AI stuff can be absolutely transformational, and it will concentrate the wealth even farther. Now, you mentioned Bernie Sanders. To me, Bernie moved himself far to the right in 2016. All he was saying, he was talking about health care for all, education for all. Okay, that's fine. But he was talking about just making rich people that speculate in the stock market pay their fair share in taxes. Not somebody that develops a cure for cancer or writes a good book.
Well, even then, Bernie Sanders, the Bernie Sanders of the world miss out on something, and that is this. One of the things that has driven the United States economy is that the U.S. goes around the world, whether it's Africa, whether it's South America, they overthrow government. If they want bananas, they go to Guatemala, they overthrow the government, and then turn the whole country into a banana plantation. And then Americans can't figure out why it cost $1.99 a pound for apples that were grown right up here in Westminster, Maryland, but it's only 39 cents a pound for bananas that were grown 4,000 miles away, 5,000 miles away. Why is that? Because we're robbing the South Americans blind and stealing their bananas and overthrowing their country. So what the Bernie Sanders and all of the world say basically is this. Let's ignore the fact that the United States is going around the world robbing and stealing like pirates, slaughtering and killing people in Africa, South America, and stealing their stuff. Let's ignore the fact that all of this money is made by piracy, imperialism, and theft. And let's just say, here in America, let's just make sure everybody gets their fair share. This is not the kind of system that gives people their fair share, and it it ain't going to happen. If you say to the Rupert Murdochs and the Elon Musks and the Larry Ellisons of the world, hey, we'd like you to share your wealth with some of the other people, the answer is going to be no. And they own the system. They own the politicians, the president, the all of the House of Representatives and the Senate. So Bernie's argument that somehow we can convince these oligarchs to share their money is preposterous. And all he does is drags people back into a system that threw them under the bus 40 years ago.
I totally agree with you. And the one thing, when people say United States steals bananas from Guatemala to make them rich, we know who we're talking about. We're not talking about you and me. We're talking about the top 1%, the owners right. of the United Fruit Company or whatever. But when they need a war, they'll ask you and me and, you know, people that are more financially desperate to go fight that war, go to the front.
Yep.
And one thing I do want to say, though, I know it's controversial, but you'll let me just give me one more minute. I want to say, you know, some, you know, words, positive words on the behalf of Israel and the Israeli military. It is the best military, probably, man for man, in the world. But yet, somehow, on October 7th, when rockets were streaming into Israel, 6 o'clock in the morning, the entire small country was on notice that there being an attack. This unbelievable fighting force took 8 hours to get down to where the... it's shocking. How did that happen?
Kind of hard to believe, isn't it?
Hard to believe, but it gets...
Kind of hard to believe. It's come out that there was a stand-down order.
It's an amazing fighting force. On October 7th, they go into Gaza, and yet it's taken them 2 years to defeat Hamas. 2 years? 35,000, let's say 50,000, let's say 100,000 Hamas troops against the Israeli army with planes, tanks, helicopters, artificial intelligence. What's going on? You know what it kind of reminds me of? It reminds me of the amazing Red Army in 1945 in July. Stalin is just kicking the Nazis' ass, but yet he stops at the edge of Warsaw. Why? Because there are a bunch of Polish nationalists fighting the Nazis, and Stalin wanted the Nazis to slaughter all the Polish nationalists. And I feel that we know what's going on in these 2 years. They're just, you know, it's just demolition after demolition. Oh, there's a Hamas command center under here. Really? Really?
Well, and the bottom line is this, you know, to me, I don't separate Israel from the U.S. in the same way. For the U.S. to say Israel is doing something and we don't like it, it's like saying, you know, my hand is doing something. I don't like it. I can't control my hand. Well, whose hand is it?
No,
it's mine.
100%.
It's absurd.
But I would
it's absurd.
I don't mean to interrupt. It's the U.S. government. I mean, you know, and that's where, like you're saying, I like what you're saying. You're to the left of the Democratic Party. That ain't hard to be.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and to me, what I see in political discourse whenever I go to a party or something, anybody that's sitting there going, oh, Trump's a liar and a rapist, in the back of my mind, I'm going, they're doing all right. They're able to pay their
bills. You know, here's the thing about it. I see the Democratic Party today is the Republican Party of George W. Bush. 2000, if you look at the Republican Party from 2000 to 2006, that is exactly the Democratic Party today. You know, say, hey, look at us. We have diversity. Remember Bush? We've got Alberto Gonzalez. We've got Condoleezza Rice. She's a black female. We've got a black male, what's his name? The defense Colin Powell. They were all, we've got all this diversity. They were warmongering lunatics. And now what do the Democrats say? We got all these, we've got all of this diversity. You're committing genocide. What do I care about a bunch of diverse genocide people? At any rate, thank you very much. Certainly appreciate the call and appreciate you supporting WPFW. All right. The number is 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hello?
You are on the air. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, Garland. JT calling from New York.
Talk to me, JT.
I saw the same thing you saw with that little girl being machine gun. You're a tough guy. You got me too. Tears came to my eyes. There's something called the rules of engagement. during a war or a conflict, and they just machine gunned that poor little girl down. It took me a while to come down from seeing that. And we are being ruled, as Smedley Butler said, General Smedley Butler of the Marine Corps, he said, in not so many words, this is a gangster type of a government. He said he went to, the Philippines? He said it wasn't for the government. It was for Dole Pineapple. We are being run by a gangster mentality. And Garland, I want to thank you, man, so much for putting out the truth and keeping it real. You take care and God bless you.
Thank you very much. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Garland, man. It's Marvin, man, from Fort Washington, Maryland, man.
Talk to me, Marvin. I'm all ears, brother.
I want to say rest in power, rest in peace to my sister, my revolutionary, Asante Shakur. Mm-hmm. You know, her whole life was dedicated to the liberation of our people, man. You know, and to me, it's sad when, you know, we as the people can't even get together other than a football game or a cabaret or a party. You know, we can't get together, you know, to just open up our own businesses, man. You know, it's time for us to love each other, trust each other, man. You know what else is
important? You bring up something important, and that is Cuba, right? The people of Cuba. You know, most people don't know the history of Cuba. You know, it was run by the CIA. It was run by the mafia, but I repeat myself. And the indigenous people of Cuba had a revolution and overturned and threw out these criminals. And the United States has been trying to put the criminals back in ever since, been doing everything we can to starve the people of Cuba, to bring suffering upon the people of Cuba, to destroy the people of Cuba. And they have stood, and we do the same thing in Venezuela, Nicaragua, any country that stands up and says, you know, I want a revolution. I want out from under the United States thumb. And the United States heel, the United States does everything they can to destroy them. Both parties, black, white, you name them. I don't see anybody in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party standing up against what we're doing in Cuba and Venezuela and Nicaragua and Haiti. Haiti also. Go ahead.
And, you know, these genocides have been going on ever since they came to this land and stole this land and killed off 118 million indigenous people of this land, you know.
The American history is just one genocide after the next. One genocide after the next. Most people don't even know about what happened in the Philippines and all the horrible things that the United States has done over the course and is still doing in the Philippines. Most people don't know, get a book called The Phoenix Program about the CIA operations of murder, assassinations, and you name it in Vietnam and all the treachery that the U.S. has done across this world.
I mean, but look what they've done to people of color here and all. I mean, look at Britain. How many countries did Britain colonize? Over about 300?
All of them.
The whole Caribbean, India, Kenya, African countries, you know.
Well, how about this? In the 1980s, right here in the Washington, D.C. area, with the whole Rayful Edmonds, with all of the drugs, we found out about the crack. Remember, crack babies, crack this, exactly. Crack that. And we found out that it was a CIA operation, Air America, that they were working with the Contras in Nicaragua to bring fighting against the indigenous Nicaraguan people who wanted a revolution. The United States and the CIA went down with them, and the United States government shipped cocaine into D.C., into Chicago, into L.A., into the black and the poor and the Latino places, cities, and then passed laws and said if you get caught with regular cocaine, which was what the rich white people had, you would get a small sentence. If you got caught with crack, you'd get a major sentence. So they brought the drugs into the black communities and then punished the people with the black people with the drug war because of the drugs that the CIA brought in.
That most of those drug laws were under Democratic parties too.
Yeah. Yep. That's it.
And the crime bills.
Yeah, if that's what you're talking about. Yep, the crime bill of 93, I believe it was. So, you know, as Malcolm X said, black folks have not been benefiting from American democracy. They have been suffering at the hands of American hypocrisy.
And you know, with these so-called budget cuts, over 300,000 black women lost jobs this year. Over 300,000 black women lost jobs. So, you know, when they start cutting Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and I think, you know, you would see people finally rise up to the occasion.
Well, how about this? They added 150, count it, $150 billion to the Pentagon budget. Imagine what that could do for Americans. Imagine what that could do for everyday people. Imagine the people that could get the work. They don't have a dime for us. And that's why I'm not a member of either party. I didn't see anybody in the Republican Party. I didn't see anybody, these so-called black leaders in the Democratic Party, standing up saying, hey, no, I'm not voting for this. You need to send some money back to my community to help the poor, to help the people, the drug addicted, to help the homeless. Nope. Nope, because the people who pay their bills, the people who make them rich, the people who are giving them their, you know, underhanded jobs and sweetheart deals on homes and all of the things that they get, those people are benefiting from them. So we don't even have black leaders. We got a black misleadership class.
And you know, I want to go back to our women, man. Our women, black women and women of color have been in the forefront of our struggles since we've been in these shorts, man. And we got to honor our women more, man.
Thank you very much. Certainly appreciate it. 202-588-0893. Do we have any other callers? No other callers. Okay. All right. Well, we might have time for another one, but we only got about 2 minutes. So if you're going to call in, make it quick. You know, we have an interesting conversation. Boy, this hour seems to go very, very fast. But I mean, you know, the only place I try to go with my conversations is to get people to view the world not through a partisan lens. I put it to you like this. I simply try to view the world like I was an alien that was dropped on the earth, not black, not white, not Democrat, not Republican, not an American, not a Russian, not a North Korean, nothing. Just a person looking at the situation and saying, what is just? What is fair? Every human being should have the same right and the same expectations of rights, number one. And number two, that I do not believe that we have a system, that the people in charge of this system are looking out for the working class. The people who are running this system don't work for us, don't care about us, and it's obvious by the results of their actions. They work for the ruling elite against us. They work to mitigate the anxiety and the tension that the working class people have because their rights are being thwarted, because their needs are not being met. And because though we are told this is some kind of a democracy with representation, when your government is committing a genocide and the people say we don't want it and the government just ignores you, that's not democracy. A democracy is what? That's bottom up rule. The people say to the government, this is what we want, and the government represents us. So the people are saying to the government, look, we don't want a genocide. And the government said, we don't work for you. We don't work for you. But you know what will happen in the midterms? They'll come to us and they'll say, we need your votes. Every 4 years, you got to support us because that guy's scary. That group, that party's scary. They will come to us. And then if they don't win, they'll blame us. Well, the only reason I didn't win was because you didn't show up. They will not represent us. Our lives will materially deteriorate. And when we say you just gave another $150 billion to the Pentagon budget, what about these poor homeless people, these poor struggling people, these poor single mothers, these addicted people that need some rehabilitation? What about the people? They can't hear us. But they can. Every 4 years, we're supposed to hear them. Every 2 years, we're supposed to be there to support them. You know, it's about time for people to wake up. At any rate, I want to thank my main man, Kalia, for doing a fantastic job. Coming up next, Robin Holden with some of the best music you will ever hear. I listen to this. It's one of my favorite shows in the world. After Acting a Monkey, for an hour, it just kind of soothes this savage beast and makes me feel good. So check out Robin Holden. She is really, truly a talented curator of music, and I appreciate her talent, and you will too. Coming up next at 7 o'clock, me and my main man, Kalia, always got some good sounds. This time I'm going back to the 80s with some Nucleus. Let's talk.
That's right, Earthlings. Me and the Jam On production crew here are taking over this world. So we want all of you ding-dangers to pack up your hips and your hocks, get on your high horses, and vamoose! jam on. Another world is safe for freedom, justice, and the galactic funk. Time to ride off into the universe, partners.
WPFW presents Amplify Sudan, Wednesday, November 19th. A day of emancipatory, informational, and inspirational programming centering Sudanese sovereignty and the ongoing threat to peace and security for her people. From 5 a.m. until midnight, there will be discussions with activists, journalists, and the people most impacted by what's happening in Sudan, in addition to the presentation of music and poetry centering Sudan. That's Amplify Sudan, Wednesday, November 19th, 5 a.m. until midnight, on WPFW, Building a Better World.